Welcome back to the latest edition of The Audible, presented by Trader Joe's. I'm Bruce Feldman, joined as always by my colleague from The Athletic, Stuart Mandel. By the way, shout out to our friends at Trader Joe's. Tonight was one of those nights where we weren't expecting to be here for Thanksgiving weekend. We are, and the fridge and freezer were kind of empty, but one of the things we keep around that is from Trader Joe's, which is always a good go-to in a pinch, and that is their gnocchi. It's frozen and it's really good, and it was a big help rather than have to go back to the grocery store today. So
you've been raving about the Trader Joe's gnocchi for years, the way I've been raving about Trader Joe's pita crackers for years. We each have our go-to staple item, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's one of the many. I think I've said to you, it's the only place I get tuna fish from, and not that I eat it every day, but it's a go-to. But the gnocchi came in handy, as I realized we didn't have any tomato sauce in the house for something else we bought. So,
hang on 1 second before we talk about football. How do you pronounce the thing that goes on spaghetti and pizza?
Tomato sauce.
Tomato sauce?
Yeah.
Tomato.
Tomato sauce.
It sounded like you were saying tomato, like M-A-T-A.
I don't know. I think it's
a New York. What part are you from? Central New York?
I'm from upstate New York.
That's a remnant from it. That's a unique pronunciation to me. All right.
No, the one word that I seem to struggle with is draws. And like some people have what they keep their socks or underwear or t-shirts in. Mm-hmm. I always just still call it draws.
You mean a drawer?
Yeah, exactly.
That's interesting. I used to have trouble with that one too, but eventually you realize it's drawer. So anyway, college football playoff rankings. It's that time of year when we dissect everything the committee says. There's nothing I'm outraged about. I do find, every selection committee chairman handles it differently. And I'm starting to find Boo Corrigan to be the strangest of them all. Did you hear him talking about Clemson?
I actually did not. Confession, I did not have a chance to watch it tonight. I was doing some family stuff. And at this point, obviously I'll catch it next week, but I don't know. I'm a little over that show. I feel like I can see what the rankings were that night, but I don't, if I miss that show, I'm okay.
Well, the show was the Clemson comment came in his teleconference later on the show. I mean, the strangest part of the rankings to me right now is that LSU is now the number 5 team in the country, and they've kind of recast their season as if most of it never happened. I mean, they did lose 40-13 at home to Tennessee, and they are now 5 spots ahead of Tennessee with the same record. They beat Alabama and Ole Miss, and they love them for that. Now, he did say on the I have the transcript here, and whoever asked this first question is clearly a Clemson fan who says, I'm trying to get my head around LSU being ranked ahead of Clemson. When he's asked about that late Clemson's resume later, he says, with regards to Clemson, there was a question about USC's defense and Clemson's offense. Because on the show, when they asked him why LSU's ahead of USC, he said they'd like to see a little bit more from USC's defense. The SC defense is, when you look at that game, what a great game it was, 48-45. I think we're looking for a stronger showing by the defense. As a committee, a more dominant win in those situations to continue to move forward. As for Clemson, I think maybe a little bit of ups and downs with regards to the quarterback position that we talked about in the room. But again, a really good team that's had a really good year through week of 12. That's our evaluation. So if the problem with USC is their defense, did the LSU-Tennessee thing not happen?
I would have probably more of an issue if I was Clemson of just being behind Alabama at this point. To me, and we've talked about Alabama here on this, I just think, this is a team that lost to Tennessee, lost to LSU, barely survived Texas A&M, barely survived Texas. I'm looking at it. They beat Ole Miss. That's a pretty good win, but Ole Miss is 20th. It's not like Ole Miss is.
Ole Miss plummeted in their own rankings last week after the Arkansas game.
No, I get it. Ole Miss is 20th in the latest rankings. But I mean, you know, yeah, you barely beat Texas. They're 23rd. What am I missing of why that they're behind a two-loss Alabama team?
There's a little bit of a circular logic thing going on with those SEC teams. I mean, clearly they think the SEC is really good, and the SEC is usually really good. But there's a circular thing going on where, like, if you beat Alabama, then you get ranked really high because they have such respect for Alabama. But Alabama's ranked where they are because of...
They're Alabama, and we're who Alabama. They were before. They're not Alabama. Right now, like, they do not have a very impressive resume. And again, you know, they have two losses. They were close losses, but they were still losses. And they almost lost on the last play to Texas A&M. And that was in Tuscaloosa. And Texas A&M stinks. I just don't know what you're giving them that much credit for. I mean, they beat Ole Miss on the road. It's okay. You know, and then I don't know what, you know, I don't know what we're getting too excited over for them to have them in 7 ahead of a team that has one loss. And granted, they got whipped by Notre Dame, but Notre Dame's in the top 15. You also have, you know, they have two, you know, Louisville's 25th. That's not much behind Texas or Ole Miss. And they have another top 25 win. They beat Florida State, who's actually ranked higher than any of the teams Alabama beat.
And the Clemson person who asked the question, who's really upset, is because he thinks that they should be treating the NC State game as a top 15 win, because that's what they were ranked around then when they still had Devin Leary. When you think about it, Clemson, Alabama, kind of similar. Here's Boo Corrigan. This is the comment I was actually looking for originally about Clemson. Really good football thing. Really good football team. I think it's trying to figure out what stands out for them. Really good defensive line. Really good defensively. 6-1 against teams over 500. Again, I know this can sound repetitive, but in watching them, you're looking for something that makes them different, makes them stand out. In that respect, Coach Swinney's done a great job again this year with his team, but the committee views them as the number 8 team. I've never heard that one before. Have you? We're looking for something about them that makes them stand out.
No, but I mean, look, this show, I mean, I'm going to tell you what I would try to tell myself. Don't take it too seriously.
It's mostly amusing. Although not amusing to the, like, it's amusing to me and you, but if you're a fan of the team, if you're a Clemson fan and wondering why you're ranked behind Alabama and that's the explanation you get. I mean, I'm looking for what makes Alabama stand out this year.
Yeah. Yeah. What makes them stand out from other Alabama teams is they
are as good as them.
Well, they've been undisciplined more so. And
yeah,
but I don't know.
I don't think after all that, you know, at the end of the day, LSU is only going to the playoff if they beat Georgia. And if they beat Georgia, they should go to the playoff. Alabama is not going to the playoff.
By the way, so let me just ask you this, though, the way it's set up.
Yeah.
If LSU loses to, I mean, if they lose to Texas A&M, another story. But if they lose, as I think you and I both think they will, to Georgia in the SEC title game, they will be 10-3. I'm curious how far they'll fall because, again, like, let's assume form holds and SC beats Notre Dame and Oregon beats Oregon State. I don't know if they'd be behind, you know, I imagine they'd be behind the loser of that game, certainly the winner of that game, not the loser. But then you have Tennessee there, who we think will be 10-2 and beat them, whip them handily head to head. I mean, it doesn't matter. I guess it's a moot point. Just to
see. It only matters if you're trying to figure out what bowl game they're going to go to. Yeah. And, like, obviously LSU wants to go to the Sugar Bowl. But to do that, they would have to stay ahead of all the other SEC teams. And I don't know. Are they going to fall behind Alabama? I mean, personally, since it doesn't really matter, like, I would just have Tennessee. I mean, I don't know why Tennessee. I know they lost Hendon Hooker. Why they have to be, like, they shouldn't go to the playoff, obviously. Why they have to be behind both Alabama and LSU? You beat those teams. You have the same record. Not only are you behind them, you're way behind them. I guess they're just the South Carolina loss was so bad that they felt like they had to drop them pretty far. By the way, you know who else they don't have any respect for? Penn State just stayed at 11 for for as long as these rankings have come out. Ohio State, Michigan this week. You know what's, I remember when it was announced at the time that the US-England World Cup match was going to be on Black Friday, and then I never thought about it again. Now that it's here, like, your network, Fox, on Friday and Saturday is going to probably have two sporting events.
No, you're missing it. This has been in the works for a long time. On Thursday, on Thanksgiving Day, they have the Cowboys and the Giants.
Right.
That thing is going to probably, I don't know, that may get 30 million viewers.
Well, I just always assume the NFL is going to get way more than anything else.
It does, but I mean, the Packers stink this year, and the number on the Cowboys Packers game a couple of weeks ago was insane. And this is a Thanksgiving game. They maybe do more than 30 million. I mean, it's the Giants, who are not awful this year, and obviously the Cowboys are really good. It's big markets, it's big brands, and there, you know, this is the whole symmetry of, okay, we're going to go from Cowboys Giants Thanksgiving Day to US England World Cup Friday to Ohio State Michigan Saturday. And correct me, I should know what we have on Sunday in the NFL, but it'll probably be another massive hit too. So that has been the big weekend that they've been pointing to for a long, long time.
Well, both the US England and Ohio State Michigan, I think, could both get over 20 million viewers. I mean, that would be high for Ohio State Michigan, but it's definitely possible.
Yeah, I mean, they're both undefeated. People have been pointing to this game. I mean, it feels like a playoff elimination game at this point. I would guess that it would carry a lot more weight than whatever you're going to get when there's a 12-team playoff, where both teams would probably be in.
Oh, boy, you're channeling Ari Wasserman right now. I see.
No, I mean, but is that wrong? I mean, they both would be in if they're undefeated now.
Well, let me ask you this. Does it feel... I think that it doesn't feel quite as big as the 2006 game, because that game literally went straight from... There was no Big Ten title game. The winner of that game was going to the BCS National Championship. So we don't have quite that. We have the team is going to go to the playoff. But first, they do have to win another game to be absolutely sure of that. I feel like
it's as big as that game, if not bigger, but you know, it's recency bias, but I think some of
it, if it's as big as that game or bigger, then why would it get a lot smaller if in a 12 team playoff?
No. I'm saying that game this year is bigger than the one you're talking about in 2000. You know, we were both at that game in Columbus, you know,
whatever. Why is it bigger than that one?
I feel like it's bigger than that one because of maybe last year. And I just feel a little bit like, you know, the last year has built to this. You definitely have bad blood between the coaches with Ryan Day and Jim Harbaugh. I mean, just today, Ryan Day was asked about the born on third base comment, and he didn't want to comment on it now, but I imagine if they win, he might.
Yeah.
So I think because of that, I mean, nobody in coaching, you know, like I just don't feel like there was that case between the two coaches before. I don't think
Jim Tressel and Lloyd Carr.
No, there wasn't that animosity or that friction, where there's been friction really for a while, you know, between the staffs, whether it was Jim Harbaugh and Urban Meyer or now Jim Harbaugh and Ryan Day. So I think that adds on to it. Yeah, I feel like it's a, you know, again, maybe it's recency bias, but I feel like this is an even bigger game. To Ari's point, and he and I did not tag team on this, but I'd agree with him. If both teams are in, like essentially in, because if you're undefeated in this case, now look, if they both have two losses going in the game, it's probably a different story. But if they're undefeated like this, they're both going.
They are. No question about it. The stakes, like the individual stakes of that game, will be a little bit lower. But I don't think that means people won't be as interested. It's still undefeated Ohio State against undefeated Michigan. I mean, people watch that game when it's, you know, when one of the teams is 8-3. I mean, it's that rivalry game. It's a must-see game every year. And this one's particularly must-see. So it's kind of like in the NFL, right? Like you just told me that 30 million people are going to watch a Cowboys Giants game that has no playoff, like direct playoff implications other than one win gets you a little bit closer. I just think people will reset their. I mean, purists won't like it, but it just you're gonna reset your the way you perceive the sport a little bit. And so things like what I think we'll be talking about with 2 weeks left in the season in 2024 is who's going to get the buys, who's going to get home field advantage and all that stuff.
Maybe. I do not know if I agree. Let's get to the mailbag.
Okay. As always, you can send your questions to theaudiblepod@gmail.com. This first one's from Andrew. Hey guys, last Friday, when asked about Lincoln Riley's future on the Tony Kornheiser show, Paul Feinbaum said he thought Lincoln Riley would ultimately end up in the pros. It's been said that one of the reasons why Riley may have left Oklahoma was because he didn't want to deal with the competition in the SEC. Given that the Big Ten is also a competitive league, if and when USC ultimately goes to the Big Ten, I don't think it's an if, it's a when, what percentage would you give that is without Riley as their coach? Alternatively, if he is still the coach, how long do you think he stays?
I would give it maybe a 15% chance that he's not their coach. He's only 39 still. It feels like he's older than that because he's been a head coach for a while now. Yeah, I think at some point he will go to the NFL, but I don't think it's going to be before they move to the Big Ten. It's not that far off. So my guess is Lincoln Riley didn't make this big move for his young family and everything else that it meant leaving behind at Oklahoma and just bail for the NFL. I think he'll go to the NFL. My guess is he will be at USC for at least 5 years.
I mean, I remember everybody saying when he was at Oklahoma that he was going to go to the NFL. And everybody, that's part of why going to USC was so shocking because people always assumed if he left Oklahoma, it would be for the NFL. So are we sure he actually wants to go to the NFL?
I don't know for sure of it. I suspect it would be in the back. It would be in the back of his head.
Yeah.
I think for a lot of coaches, especially guys who are, you know, the thing why I would be see Lincoln Riley maybe more leaning towards the NFL than most coaches, college head coaches, is usually so what happens with a lot of NFL head coaches, they're head coaches, but they're probably play callers. And, you know, Lincoln Riley's a play caller. And I think at some point where it's all ball, and I'm not saying he doesn't love recruiting, but I think that would probably be really attractive to him, you know, down the road. I don't know how far down the road. I would say, you know, I think he'll be at USC at least 5 years. Now, I'm not saying after five, he's definitely gone, but, you know, the NFL is always going to be there.
Okay. Speaking of coaches who might be on the move, maybe this one a little bit sooner. Looks like this is from Dave in Redwood City, which is not far from me. Looks like Lane Kiffin is on the move again in a dramatic way, this time with word leaking 72 hours before the Egg Bowl. I don't begrudge him at all for the move. I bet if I were an Ole Miss fan, though, the timing stinks. But my question for you is, how do you think the Auburn job will end for Lane? More likely to be another dramatically bad firing for him? Or does he leave it dramatically for the next job that's better than Auburn? So Dave is referring to a TV report out of Mississippi this Monday that said it's done deal. He already agreed to the job. He's leaving. To which Lane Kiffin himself had quite a retort. But I don't know. Should we treat it as we're pretty sure he's leaving? You said on the podcast on Sunday, 75%.
Yeah, I would be surprised if Lane Kiffin would turn down Auburn to stay at Ole Miss. I mean, look, and I think I've said this on the podcast before, and I've said it before on some other shows, which is, you know, the last two coaches before Brian Harsin, one won a national title at Auburn. The other one came within like a play of winning one. You know, no one's done anything close to that at all.
Go further back than that. Tommy Tuberville had an undefeated season, only didn't play for a national title just because of a stupid system, right?
And none of these guys that we're talking about are close to Nick Saban, right? In terms of, you know, what they did. You know, Gus Malzahn's a good coach. You know, Gene Chizik. You know, that was, he had Cam Newton and he won a national title. And, so look, if I'm Lane Kiffin looking at it, I'm going, man, I could really kind of be the thorn at Nick Saban's side here. I have better resources at Auburn than I would at Ole Miss. And he's done a really good job at Ole Miss. Now the first year was 5-5. Last year was really good at 10-3. We'll see how they finish right now. It feels like, you know, they've definitely lost some momentum. I felt like they were a little bit of a house of cards early in the year because it was like, who had they beaten? And you need to hear a little things where people are like, I don't know how good they are. You know, like my guess is they'll win the Egg Bowl and go 9-3, which is certainly not a bad year to win 19 games, in a 2-year stretch in Oxford. But I think my guess is I would be very surprised if he is not the head coach of Auburn. I'm not saying I know for sure that's happening, but that's my hunch.
We talked like a month ago, whenever the Auburn job officially opened up, and we said, remember we talked about Lane or Dion, and I ultimately said, I think Lane, just because he's a proven coach in that own division. But all right, how do we see it going if he's the Auburn coach? I think, if he gets fired, I don't think it'll be because they stink. It's just because crazy things seem to happen there. But I guess do you think he could win a national title at Auburn? Let's just go that far.
I do. Yeah, I do think he could win one. Because they have a lot of resources. And I think one thing Lane has done a really good job of, and I used this pun before and it just kind of fits, I think Lane has kind of found Lane's lane on social media and his voice, and he's very comfortable there. And that doesn't mean it's going to make you that much of a better coach, but I do think it helps in how people look at you, how your players look at you. I think it helps how recruits look at you. And I think it's something they can package there. And the guys following, Brian Harsin was just a really, really, really bad fit there. And I think he will give them some presence in the SEC West, which is kind of an interesting time right now. Again, this would be an interesting question to throw out now, because I feel like we did this with Clemson and Dabo being like, do you think he'll ever win another national title then there? And you and I both, I think, agree that he wouldn't. I would ask you this as I'm leading into this with Lane Kiffin, possibly.
I know what you're going to ask.
Do you think Nick Saban will ever win another national title at Alabama?
Yes, I do. Now, if he comes back next year and has another kind of underwhelming team like this year, maybe I'll revisit. But it's just, he adapts, he changes. Dabo doesn't. That's the difference there. And we're saying that, and Clemson is not that far off from a playoff bid this year. But I don't think that this team is on, frankly, anywhere near the level of his great teams from a few years ago. I agree with you. I think sky's the limit for him there at Auburn. I guess the scenario where he leaves for a better job is the NFL. And obviously his brief stint as an NFL head coach
did not go well.
That was like 8 stops ago. He himself will tell you he had no business having that job. He wasn't remotely ready for it. If he wins big at Auburn, that opportunity might present itself again.
Yeah, I don't know. The SEC West is very interesting now. We're talking about, I agree with you. I do think Nick Saban will win another national title. I would definitely not write him off. He's different than all the other football coaches in college football. Obviously LSU has had a good first year under Brian Kelly. Texas A&M is so much worse than either any of us could have imagined. Auburn is obviously in a rebuild. Arkansas, I feel like, I don't know how much better they're going to get under Sam Pittman. He's definitely been a good hire there. But again, it's really interesting to see how this thing unfolds. I think Lane will do well at Auburn. I really do. I feel like he's in a much better place than he was when he left that state to go be the head coach at FAU. And I think there were some rocky moments, but he grew into it. He's definitely grown into it. And I think he's just seems like he's in a better place personally than he was not that long ago. So we shall see.
I think real quick, in terms of the SEC West, I think it's going to become, with the transfer portal, a situation where you're going to see teams kind of like LSU this year that just flip like from one year to the next based on, did we get a good quarterback in the portal this year? Did we not? A&M, as hopeless as they look right now, if he makes the right, as we've talked about a million times, makes a good offensive coordinator hire, lets them be the play caller, you know, goes into the portal for some stuff. Like, there's no reason why they can't be a lot better next year. And of course, it could go the other way as well. So, like, I don't think Lane Kiffin will have a 3-year rebuild at Auburn. I think he'll do what he did at Ole Miss, right? Have one kind of, you know, growing into its season and then win the next year.
Yeah, maybe so. Maybe so. You want to ask me the next question because it seems like it's directly for me.
Yes, this one goes directly to you, Bruce. Thanks for spilling the beans on Michigan's secret asset. I'm kidding, but not really. He's talking about the fact that your story got, he thinks your story got Biff the Charlotte job. Is it that simple?
I don't think it's that simple.
No. I don't think either.
I think Biff wowing them in the interview process got Biff the Charlotte job. But
should at UMS, should Michigan fans be worried? Do you anticipate that Harbaugh will replace him with another, quote, culture guy? And if so, who would that be? That's probably hard to determine, but who would be your pick?
That's a good question. Biff is really unique. I don't know who is out there. Like, I was trying to think about it. Like, who would Jim Harbaugh really listen to? I think that's part of the deal, right? And, you know, I don't know. I mean, if Oliver Luck decided he wanted to go work in Ann Arbor, obviously Jim Harbaugh has a relationship with that family because of Andrew. I just don't know who would be that guy who, or that person, you know. Like, I mean, the culture guy, I kind of know the best, I feel like, is Chris Peterson. I don't see him leaving to go be somebody's assistant, you know, in that regard. And I don't know how, you know, I don't even know what their relationship is like. So that would be the one guy I would say, because he has a lot of clout and he thinks about these things. So I don't know.
It's impossible to come up with a name. I mean, but do you think he recognizes the importance that Biff played and will basically, like, hire for that position the way you hire a new running backs coach?
I would imagine he would. I just don't know who that's going to be. He has some guys from his NFL past who are in some support roles. I just don't know how involved they are. Like, there are certain guys there who are very accomplished coaches. Like, Jesse Minter's dad, Rick, is an analyst there. You know, he's certainly an accomplished coach and, you know, is one of these guys who, like Biff, has really nothing to lose in terms of, like, you know, he's not trying to get a job on the staff to go be the next offensive or defensive coordinator. But I just don't know the personality, how it fits. Like, Biff was the guy who's talking to everybody in the building, like, all the time. That takes a different kind of, you know, because of his organizational stuff. Should Michigan fans be worried? That's interesting. Cause, like, I do think that's going to be, he will be missed. Now, I think some of this was, like, to put in place, they needed a jolt for their culture and he helped bring it. I'm curious to see how that plays going forward. I don't want to overstate, you know, his impact, but just from knowing what I know from the people who've talked to me about this, that's not going to be, you know, in some ways he may be harder to replace than the coordinators that Jim had to replace. All right. This question, Stu, is from Jack in Erie. Given A, how much money is rolling into these major college programs, and B, their blatant disregard for tradition as evidenced by conference realignment, the end of rivalries, and the ever-changing postseason. Why don't we see college teams tearing down stadiums, or is it stadii, every 30 years like NFL teams do, and building new facilities that can bring in even more revenue? As a follow-up, which major program would you say is most in need of a completely new stadium? I'd say Penn State. Whoa. I wouldn't say that.
I mean, you've been there more. When was the last time you were at Penn State?
Like about 20 days ago.
Oh.
Stadium was rocking. Penn State for the game day experience does not need to change anything.
I mean, given what's been going on with their tunnel this year, I might suggest that the Big House needs some sort of massive reconfiguration.
It's a good question.
There's a good question. It's happened. We're seeing it in a few places. My alma mater has announced, in fact, that they're going to tear down Ryan Field and build a completely new, smaller, modern stadium. Do you know what the price tag on that though is?
To tear it down, probably, like, they could have, like, three frat guys just demolished that place. It's like a high school stadium.
Not the cost to tear it down. I'm sure we could go to any number of vendors and get a quote on that, the price to build a new stadium.
Oh, there? I would guess it'd probably be like $300
million. $800 million. And so the reason that they don't do it more often is it's really, really, really expensive. That's probably on the low end, right? Because they're going to build a 35,000 seat stadium. If the University of Michigan said, you know what, blow up the big house and build us a fancy new stadium with luxury suites, blah, 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 wouldn't that be like several billion dollars?
Probably so, yeah.
Yeah. And so that's where you see that, like, as much as we like to say college is very professionalized, it is not a multi-billion dollar for-profit business that can do that kind of thing, like, pretty easily. You know, these NFL, these pro franchises, they get all these tax breaks from the city. I mean, you're going to get that from Ann Arbor or State College? No. That's going to have to be totally, mostly, I would think, privately raised. So it's a really hard thing to pull off.
Fill in the blank to what I'm about to say. The crappiest stadium you've been in to see a college football game in the last 5 years was?
I haven't been to a lot of college football games in the last 5 years, but I do have an answer to that.
You're going to say the same thing I'm going to say.
The crappiest stadium I've been in is Mackey Stadium in Reno, Nevada.
Ooh, we're not saying the same thing.
Okay. What is yours?
The crappiest stadium I've been in was the Murph, where the old Holiday Bowl was being played.
Oh, well, that doesn't count. Here I go, you know, insulting the good people of the University of Nevada, and you're going to pull out an NFL stadium.
Well, it's an NFL stadium that was literally falling apart. And, you know, good on San Diego State. They have a new place, but it was way past dated and falling apart. So, you know, what's interesting, when I read Jack's question, I thought back to like the one NFL game I did as a sideline reporter. And then again, this is, I don't know, Josh Allen's rookie year, so this is 4 years ago. Was at the Bills Stadium, and they had changed the name, because I remember it growing up as Rich Stadium. So yep. I didn't really think, you know, because I hadn't seen when I went to that game to do that game, the Bills were really struggling, and they had been struggling for a while. So it wasn't like I was getting their games on TV. And so I didn't know it was the same place. And then we rolled up on it. I was like, wow, this is definitely one of those stadiums that is not state of the art. I mean, it's old and, you know, like, obviously there's a charm there.
Because they gave like, it a pretty, must have given it a pretty good facelift though. Cause I remember watching a Monday Night Football game and it didn't even dawn on me that that was the same stadium that I watched Jim Kelly leading the Super Bowl teams in.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not quite old enough to remember games with Joe Ferguson, but that was kind of probably the same place as, I don't know. Was that the same place OJ was running around? It might've been.
So I've probably been to about 2/3 of the Power Five stadiums. And there's not an obvious one that stands out to me as, yeah, that's the one that needs to go. There's one that would have been on the short list, but it actually is getting a huge renovation right now, and that's Reser Stadium in Corvallis. If you turn on an Oregon State football game, you're going to be like, where's the other half of the stadium? They tore down half the stadium to renovate it. So right now, all of the fans and the press and everybody is on one side.
Okay. You want me to ask you this one question? We'll end on it. Or...
Sure.
All right. This question is from Steve Kowalski in Farmington Hills, Michigan. Regarding playoff expansion, I keep hearing things such as Oregon will have an easier time to make the playoff when they have a smaller conference. But that assumes all existing conferences will keep their auto bids. Isn't there a chance some of these conferences will no longer get automatic bids, especially if the big SEC monster gobbles up a few more? I don't believe in this environment that automatic bids are forever guaranteed. Have you heard anything on this subject, Stu?
I have. You know, the proposal that was approved by the presidents that they're now trying to put into effect by 2024 has, it's not specific to a conference. It's the six highest ranked conference champions. We assume that that will be the Power Five and the best of the other of the group of five. And so unless there's some drastic change to that, you could cut the Pac-12 in half and they would still likely be one of the six highest ranked conference champs. And remember, the CFP is the conferences. Like, that's who the conferences are, the ones putting this thing together. So the Pac-12, I'm just using them because they seem to be the most vulnerable, is not going to sign off on a deal that says, hey, if you lose X, Y, and Z team, you're not eligible for the auto bid. So now we have no idea when he says, like, never say never. We have no idea how long the contract's going to be that they're working on right now. There's been no, I don't even know if they're that far along. So, you know, maybe the 12 team playoff gets approved for 6 years, 8 years, 12 years, like this one was, I don't know. But once that thing's set in stone, once that thing's signed, I don't think you have to worry about the auto bids going away. So it's actually true. Oregon will have an easier time if it stays at 10, I don't know if it is, where you know that if you win your conference, you're going to the playoff. You said that was the last thing, but I do want to give you this shout out from David Eisen. And I didn't remember this. I did read your picks, but I didn't remember this. Doesn't the shout out have to go to Bruce, who not only predicted a 3-point win by SC, but also you wrote, quote, ultimately, I think USC's D line steps up to make a play late to give the road team the close win in a wild one at the Rose Bowl. Bruce, how did you foresee that Corey Foreman would snag the game winning interception?
I didn't see Corey Foreman being the one to make that play. The only thing I would say about Corey Foreman was his name came up, and it surprised me from one of the coaches I talked to for that story, Antonio Morales, and I did talking to the guys who played him. And one of the coaches was like, yeah, number zero is super twitchy and, you know, he's a problem. And I remember thinking Corey Foreman has really done not much. He doesn't show up in the box score much. He obviously was the guy who was the high, you know, some people had him as the highest ranked player in the country the year he came out, and he just kind of been a disappointment up till that big game and that big play. So I'm going to say that will be the best guess. And I say that right in my picks column. Here are this week's guesses. That was one that
it's hard to top that.
Yeah.
I did have a 3-point game, but it was UCLA beating USC. So much for that. But my Kansas State Big 12 title pick is they're up to number 12 in the committee ranking. So it's not out of the realm of possibility. All right.
I have a shout out.
Oh, a Wednesday shout out. How about that?
Wednesday shout out. The shout out is one I shared this with you, Andy, and Max last night. The shout out is to Tom Minervino. I hope I'm pronouncing your name, Tom. You emailed me. Because I want to read a little of the story. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but as a dad who is relatively new to flag football coaching, I enjoyed your story in The Athletic about your son's team. The slow mesh play intrigued me to the point I watched a couple hours of Wake Forest clips on YouTube. On my 10U Portland Bears team this fall, we put in a variation of one of our play action passing plays, but didn't use it much, tending to more towards the Rex Grossman era Florida aerial attack. We went entire games without running the football. We won our league a few weeks ago, the Maine Flag Football League, which got us an invite to the New England Flag Football Tournament of Champions for our all-league champions in the region. It took place this past Sunday with temperatures in the low 30s with 30-mile-per-hour winds. Between the kids' frozen hands and the crazy wind, we couldn't throw anything beyond a screen pass effectively. So unlike Brian Kelly, I'm going to dodge that. So we had to embrace the ground game, including six Wake Forest. I'm going to skip through. We kept running it in that game, scoring two different touchdowns off it en route to an 18-0 win. I've attached a clip of one of them. We came out of a pool play as the number two seed and then beat the number seven, three, and number one seeds to win the championship using the slow mesh in each game. All right. So my shout out is, he sent a picture. It's very cute, of his seven person squad. Shout out to the 10U Portland Bears.
Wouldn't it be amazing if, your story about that, you talk about how, for whatever reason, because even though Wake Forest has been extremely successful with that offense, not many people in college, really nobody until David Shaw, I think, have tried to steal it or copy it. Wouldn't it be something if it's spread because of your story, it's the slow mesh spreads through youth football at a much faster pace than it did college football?
It should, because you don't need a lot. And I think it just confuses kids because it gives them hesitation. By the way, after Tom's email, it dawned on me. My son had never heard that story or the story I wrote. And he's at the age where he's in third grade. He can read. I don't know how much he can read. Like, I don't know if he could sit there and read 4,000 or 5,000 words. Well, I'm pretty sure he can't. So I read it to him last night, which was kind of interesting. So,
what do you think?
There was some stuff that he kind of got a kick out of, and there's some other stuff that he didn't appreciate, but it was funny. You know,
it would have been funny if he was like, "Well, Dad, that was pretty good, but you know, if I were your editor, I would have axed this paragraph, moved this paragraph over here."
I don't think my son is going to end up as a sports writer. I just don't think
so. No, because we're going to be writing about him.
No, I think he's, yeah, I don't know. He may be the kid who wants to coach someday. I think that's where we could see this already headed. But I don't know. Like I said, football is the thing that kind of connects us all. So when I saw Tom's email last night, it was like, I don't know what time it was, like 9 o'clock at night. I was like, I smiled as soon as I saw it. It was one
that's
of the
awesome.
People. So anyway.
Send your emails to theaudiblepod@gmail.com. Sunday morning will be, that's going to be an awesome episode after Ohio State, Michigan, after you're at Ohio State, Michigan, after all the great rivalry games. And I think there will probably be some coaching news to discuss. So should be a jam-packed episode. We'll see you next time.
And have a great Thanksgiving.